So I'm really passionate about raising kind and caring and active young people so they can, and that they know how to advocate for themselves, they can champion others, and they can make a positive impact on the world. Because change is not going to happen without, they're the future. We need to teach them and give them the tools to learn how to have that positive impact and make life better for themselves and for the future generations.
That was today's guest, Karen Caswell, answering the question, why do you teach? And you are listening to episode number 2 of the Why We Teach series on the Teacher's Guide podcast.
Gentlemen, what are the four pillars?
Now, you all remember how scary your first days at school were.
You done messed up, eh, Ron?
Hello, and welcome to the Teacher's Guide podcast. Thank you very much for tuning in. My name is Zach Woodward. I'm a primary school teacher from Brisbane, Australia, and I will be your host each week. The aim of this podcast is to provide information and experiences that will help all teachers to thrive in their role, particularly aimed at beginner teachers and those who are aspiring to one day join the teaching profession. We like each episode to be short and to the point, so let's get into it. Welcome back to the Why We Teach series. I hope that you enjoyed last week's conversation with Steph Langley. And if you're joining us for the first time today, I'd highly recommend that you listen to that episode because Steph had plenty of insights and gems about the teaching profession, in particular for beginner and early career teachers. So if you haven't yet listened to that episode, I would highly encourage you to. And today we're joined by a primary school teacher from the Gold Coast, and her name is Karen Caswell. And Karen's been teaching for about 25 years, and she shares with us some of her insights into how the profession has changed and what sustains her. And what I particularly enjoyed about this conversation with Karen is that after about 20 years of teaching, she decided to take a bit of leave and have a break from teaching. And it was then that she rediscovered her passion and her love for teaching, and now she's back in the classroom and she's loving it. So I really enjoyed hearing her journey. I started off today's conversation by asking Karen to tell us a little bit about some of her best lessons that she's ever taught and how she defines a successful lesson in the classroom.
I don't think there's a best lesson. I would probably say best units of work, mm-hmm. more so than a specific lesson.
Yeah, that sounds good.
So units of work where a couple of the favourites that I have, we're just about to do our people of character unit of work. So we're answering the big question, what makes a person worth admiring or a role model? So we're looking a lot at character traits and the type of person you are, as opposed necessarily to your achievements, more so, you know, resilience, empathy, kindness, people who demonstrate more of those character traits rather than, you know, achieving specific things. So I really like that unit of work because this year we're trying to really engage a lot with the learning partnerships. So reaching out to families, reaching out to community groups and organisations and having them involved in teaching the students about, you know, so we'll have someone come and speak about, you know, possibly a charity that they have established and then the students reflect on afterwards, well, what sort of character traits does that person demonstrate? You know, what makes them worth admiring in doing that? And it's linked to our English unit, which is to write an information report. But it also links to, I guess, the social emotional learning and the focus that we have at our school on the Big Six.
Yep.
So normally, like, people hear about the four C's. So we have the six C's, which is character and citizenship.
Yep.
And that's the work, deep learning work of Michael Fullan.
Okay.
So we use that as our pedagogical framework. So there's that one. And our term three geography unit or HAS unit is around sustainability. Mm-hmm. So using entrepreneurial thinking and the students problem solving a real world problem, coming up with a solution to the problem, designing prototypes, and sharing their solutions with others. So they're probably the types of lessons that I enjoy the most, where the students have a lot of input, they're engaged, they're actively involved, and they're real life learning.
Yeah, for sure. And with that entrepreneurial program they do, are there limits around their prototypes? Like, do they need to use milk bottles to build things, or can they bring materials from home? What does that look like in year four?
For us, for our unit, we sort of don't really set any sort of limits or restrictions. Yeah. I think if you were to run it, we have the $20 boss program at our school.
Okay.
By Global Change Agents or something?
I can't name who runs it.
And I think obviously there's a lot more parameters involved in that type of thing. Mm. But for our unit, it's learning about, you know, how to live sustainably, come up with a solution. And we encourage them to be as creative as possible. So, you know, think of something that may seem a little bit outlandish. You never know.
Yeah. No, for sure. Oh, definitely. Yeah, no, somebody once invented this thing called Uber where people book car rides, and look how well that went. So I think that's great.
Yeah.
Excellent. So we've had the fantastic units with the sustainability and teaching kids about empathy and resilience. Has there been a lesson or a unit that you've taught in your time as a teacher that didn't go so well? And most importantly, what did you learn from it?
Well, there would have been plenty in my nearly 25 years of teaching that didn't go well. I think just where you deliver, like the traditional chalk and talk, I think, where you've realised that you've pretty much spoken for however long, 30 minutes, 45 minutes, an hour, and the kids have done nothing in that time, because really what have they learnt? They've learnt to sit there and look like they're listening.
Exactly.
That's about it.
And so, there comes a time in a lesson like that, like I've done that before, and then I looked around the room and I hadn't realised there were kids with their heads down, looking out the window. Like, of course they're bored. I'm just talking at them.
Yeah, that's all right. So those types of things. And then, you know, there's always the ones where you come up with what you think is this great idea.
Yeah,
this will be fantastic. The kids will love it. And it's a big flop. And I think what I learned from that is what I think is a great idea is not necessarily what they think is a great idea to involve the students. So we're really trying to focus a lot on student agency. So ask them what are they interested in? What would they like to do? How would they like to show their learning, or how do they like to learn? And using that as your guide, not you sitting back and making all the decisions.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And I totally agree. When I give my students a bit of say in how we do something, those lessons always go far better. And obviously, as the teacher, we facilitate it, because there are some kids in the room who would like to just throw things around the room for 50 minutes. But yeah, if you let the students guide it, those lessons are often the better ones.
Definitely.
Yeah. So we heard a little bit about your teaching style in your class before, but without naming names or names of students, could you tell us a bit about your current class and what might we see when we walk past Mrs. Caswell's year four class?
So this year we have some complex students with some complex needs, so which I know every school, every class has. It's probably been a little bit, this cohort probably will have a larger number than what we've had in the past. So trying to cater for those needs and support those students and focus obviously on the rest of the class. We are big, as I said, on student agency and I guess involving students and asking the students. So we do a lot of that, trying to find out about them at the start of the year, their interests, their passions, and trying to incorporate that within their learning, giving them choice as much as possible. So we're writing an information report, and because we're looking at people of character, but the choice will be, who do you want to write about? Like, we don't all have to write about the same person, because I'm not really marking who they're writing about. I'm marking their writing. We do as well. I do a lot of I'm starting to this year. A focus of mine is the visible thinking routines.
Yep.
So trying to incorporate those and getting the students engaged in the thinking in that way. So that's something that they're learning as well as what I'm learning to include in the lessons. We're a one-to-one school device. So we do have a lot of options, I suppose, around how students present and share their learning and understanding. And it also provides us lots of opportunities to search other places for information. Mm. I try to have a lot of because I'm on Twitter as well as on Instagram, so yeah. I have some global connections, and we incorporate some read alouds or, yeah. you know, Skyping with other people from other countries so we can get that right. other perspective about, yeah. you know, how kids in other countries are learning.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess the digital, the connections.
Yeah, great.
Relationships.
Yeah, excellent. And I've – so I'm a year six teacher. And I've been told by many people that I have a bloke's classroom because my walls, I'd like to think there are some pretty things on the walls, but apparently not as nice as others. Is your classroom pretty colourful? Is it has it got plenty of resources on the walls?
It has some, yeah, for sure.
Yep.
But my another thing that I'm really conscious of this year is that it's purposeful. It's not just decorative. So I have a learning wall. At the moment it's blank. Because obviously we finished at the end of last term and it will be what goes on that wall will be decided with the students. So I'll collaborate with them as to what we put up on that learning wall. The samples of work that go on the learning wall will be student samples of work. Even word walls for science and HASS and things, we do that together. So what do we think needs to be on display? What's going to help you with your learning? Yep. I think in the past it has been more just pretty. I'm trying to move, like it's still, you know, lots of people say it's still very pretty, but I'm trying to make it more purposeful. It's not just decoration.
Yep.
And trying to involve the class in that as much as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, very nice. Very nice. And moving on slightly now from the classroom, talking to lots of teachers over the years, and I have found this as well, that extracurricular activities with students and going on camps and going on excursions, those are really the times where we get to know our students, and that's one of the reasons I love my job as a teacher. And so I'd love to hear your thoughts on extracurricular and building relationships with students in other activities apart from inside the classroom. Has that been a big part of your teaching career?
Yeah, so I've taught different grades. I'm early childhood trained, so I spent a lot of my early career with prep year one and two. So not as many, like no camps or anything with those guys. It's a lot more just more that in class and playground type things. As I've moved up with the older students, camp definitely you do develop, I guess, a chance for a different type of relationship with the students. Yeah. They see you, I guess, as, you know, trying new things as well as what they're trying as well. I do as much as I can. I can't do it all. I got up and running the AFL team at our school.
Great.
So spending the time we just had a boys team at that stage with those boys in the senior school. It gave me a different group of students and it helped me make some connections with those students as well. And then things like, I guess, discos and...
Yeah.
You know, those types of things you do see. It's a bit more relaxed than, I suppose, in the classroom maybe.
Yeah. And sometimes it can be overwhelming as a teacher if we get an email from the deputy saying, could we please have 5 volunteers for the disco this weekend, or we need another teacher to go on year 5 camp. And it's tempting to say no, but have those experiences paid off for you in your experience? Do you recommend doing as many as possible?
I think so. I mean, I wouldn't be volunteering to go on another grade's camp.
Okay,
much as I recognise the value in camp, I'm probably not someone who loves camp as much as what other teachers love camp.
Yeah.
But I go, obviously, and it is a really good time. And you reflect on it and go, yeah, that was really valuable and really worthwhile doing that. Yeah, it can be overwhelming. You sort of do feel, oh, this is after hours, or, you know, the disco or the fate, you know, helping at the fate on a Saturday or things like that. But if you can see past, you know, the bit of inconvenience that it may cause, there is benefit to developing those informal relationships with students and with parents.
Definitely.
As well. So even at the disco, you know, you can have a chat with parents, and it's not a teacher-parent conference. It's just, you know, talking about the kids dancing or, you know, just more of that sort of relaxed, fun type thing.
Yeah, exactly. And then it makes it easy the next time that you need to make contact with a parent for a good or bad reason. If you've talked to them for half an hour at the disco about what their hobbies are, it's going to make that transition a little bit easier. So, it's good to hear that other schools do so many activities as well. Now, when teachers are interviewed who've exited the profession, or beginner teachers are interviewed about the challenges of the profession, one of the big things that come up is behavior management. And a lot of teachers say, I can't put up with students talking over me anymore. So you've been teaching for 25 years. What are some of your tips and tricks for how you've dealt with behavior management over the years?
I think you need to think about it as not purely compliance. Yes, we need, students do need to comply. There are rules and expectations that they need to follow. But it's more than that. We want them engaged. We want to empower our students. So a big focus at our school is relationships with students and connections with students. We spend the first 2 weeks of the year purely devoted to developing those relationships with our students and getting to know our students. Fantastic. There's no real formal curriculum delivered in what would be considered formal curriculum delivered in that time. There's a lot of the general capabilities being done in that time.
Of course.
But because we have that time, and it's a lot of consultation and collaboration with students. So our classroom agreement, so I guess your classroom rules, they're developed in collaboration with students. How do you think our classroom should run? What do you think is reasonable? How do we show respect to others? And so then they have that buy-in, because it's not just me standing out in the front saying, you must do this, you can't do that. It's, this is what we've all agreed to, so we're all responsible and we all need to be held to account to do that. We have a big focus, like I said earlier, on character, the type of person you are. So, again, it's, well, how do my actions and behaviours impact on others? How do I like to be treated? So if I like to be treated, people to listen to me when I'm talking, then it's only fair that I listen to other people when they're talking. So I think it's a lot more around establishing those expectations together and agreeing on them, rather than you coming with your poster printed already at the start of the year. They walk in and here are our classroom rules. This is what we will do and won't do.
And
it can be challenging to find the time to develop those relationships and to make those connections. So it's being conscious that we know that the value and how important they are, and that, kids don't learn from or don't listen to people they don't like. So, and some will not comply simply because you're their teacher. They, there has to be something more for them. So it's, what is that something more? How can I engage them in that? And how can I involve them? And what can I do to connect with them?
Yeah, definitely. And so that seems like a really good approach. So you're not walking in there going, this is my classroom and this is how it's going to be. You are involving the whole class in creating those expectations.
Yeah, it's our classroom.
Yeah.
It's not mine. It's not just yours. No. It's ours. We all belong here, and we all, need to be treated in a certain way whilst we're here. If kids from that first day don't want to come back to school, well, you've lost them already.
Yeah.
So no matter what data you collect on them, if they don't want to be there, that's really hard to turn around once they have that. So we recognise that whilst data has its place and it needs to be data that we do something with. Our engagement has improved and increased. Therefore, behaviour incidences have decreased. Attendance is improving. So to me and to a lot of us, we believe that is more, that's really worthwhile and important data.
Yeah. And I like what you said there about our students, we want them to want to be at school. So our students should want to be there. And on the flip side of that also, we as teachers should want to be in our classroom. And so I suppose what I'd love you to do is what would you say to a teacher who just has a lot, they just, they're feeling overwhelmed and they go to school each day, they feel stressed. What's maybe some wisdom from your career you can give to a teacher who might be feeling that way right now?
All right. Well, I was probably them about 5 years ago.
Yep.
A lot of people say I was probably burnt out. I think I was more disillusioned. I was just unhappy with the direction, with the system. I just felt like we'd lost our way. We were being made to do things that I didn't necessarily believe were in the best interests of our students. I actually took long service leave, but I'm not saying that everyone can do that. But, you know, after it was about 20 years at that stage, I did decide, well, okay, I need to reflect.
Yeah.
And so I did. I did a bit of reflection, a bit of evaluating, a bit of thinking, well, is this really what I want to do? And yes, it is. So I think the decision then was that I started to do some reading and not like theoretical, educational, dry tests, because that's not my thing. Some people love it. Not my thing. But I did start to do some reading, and I made a decision to become connected. I probably had felt quite isolated leading up to that, different reasons for that. But you can be quite isolated, I think, as a teacher.
Definitely.
You're so busy during the day, you don't get time to go out at breaks or to talk with other teachers. And you can lose your way. So really for me, I got connected with other educators, developed a professional learning network, and I reflected on why was I a teacher? And it was because of the students in my classroom. The people that, those young people that were in front of me every single day and that I wanted to make a difference in their lives. And so I was like, okay, well, that's what I'm going to focus on. I'll do the things that I have to do. But anything else where I can manipulate or change the way I do it, that's what I did. I was like, obviously we have requirements and responsibilities in our roles as teachers, still meet all of those, but I changed, I guess, the way I was doing them and my perspective on why I was doing them.
Yeah. So I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it sounds like all of the requirements and all of the stressful parts of teaching, yes, they were still there, but you were focusing more on the why of I care about these students, I want to help them learn, so I'm going to enjoy these great moments, and those other things I need to do, I'll just get them done and I'll remember why I'm here, and it's for these kids in front of me.
Yeah, and it can be really overwhelming, all the expectations that are put on teachers.
Yes.
And definitely. You can become focused purely on those. And then you lose the joy in everything you're doing. Like you're so focused on that you don't notice when, you know, a student has success with something for the first time, or when they comment how much fun, well, they weren't commenting on how much fun things were because they weren't. It was just like, we've got to get this done. Quick, let's just do it. But, yeah, you lose that joy, I guess.
Yeah.
And it has to, like you said, we have to enjoy our work. Just as, and we have to want to be at school just as much as the kids want to.
Definitely. Something great a teacher once said to me was, he said, you're never too busy to listen to a year three student tell you what their goldfish did on the weekend. And like if I'm walking through the playground and a young kid comes up to me and says, oh, I can't tell you this long story, I go, you know, no, I'm too busy, go away. But it's actually those moments where that's one of the best parts of the job. Like hearing those funny stories from our students, that's one of the reasons why we do it. And hearing you talk about your teaching journey where you took that leave and then got connected with learning communities, you, I see, have made your own learning community and you've put some resources up on your website. And I'll put the links to that in the show notes so people can follow it. But can you please tell us a little bit about some of the blog posts and other resources you have on your website?
Okay, so I originally started with Twitter. I got connected on Twitter. In some of the books I was reading, then found a Twitter chat. So one of the first books I read was Teach Like a Pirate by Dave Burgess.
Oh, and I've heard people speak about that. I need to read that.
Yeah, you do. And you can join in the Twitter chat as well.
Okay,
so I read Kids Deserve It by Adam Welcome and Todd Nesloney, and then Teach Like a Pirate by Dave Burgess. And both of the Kids Deserve It book talked a lot about getting off your island, so getting connected with other educators. And so I started to, like, I had a personal Twitter account and I made a, like, an educator Twitter account, and started following some of these people. Didn't do a great deal, just looked around and, you know, watched what went on. During the September school holidays, in 2018, I joined the TLAP, or the Teach Like a Pirate Twitter chat in America, because it's about 11 o'clock or 12 o'clock during the day for us. So obviously you can only do it during school holidays. Enjoyed that, and enjoyed the book so much. And I reached out to Dave and he sort of Skyped in and spoke with our teachers one morning before school. And then I had a thought, well, I really like that Twitter chat. I like the book so much. So I started my own Twitter chat, which is the TLAP Down Under, so Teach Like a Pirate Down Under. And the reason being, I knew there were other educators in Australia and probably more the different countries where the time wasn't convenient for a Twitter chat. And so we've had people from all around the world join in on that Twitter chat. It's been going for about 2.5 years now.
Excellent.
So, and I've really just met around the world and in Australia so many other educators, and just the perspective you can get, the ideas, the encouragement, the support, and, you know, the challenges as well. You know, people will say, well, you know, I don't necessarily agree with that, or, you know, have you thought about this? So you're constantly, I suppose, reflecting on your practice, but being inspired, I guess, at the same time.
And then
I think it was probably a couple of months after that I decided to write a blog. So my blog probably is more reflective, more of a personal reflective journey. There is some practical things there as well, but a lot of it is more of that personal reflection. And I think I chose to do that because writing is a way that I reflect on things, and I don't believe that I'm the only one that has had the challenges that I've had or has felt the way I've felt. And I believe that the more we talk about things, the more open we can be, the better it is, not only for our mental health, but supportive for other people who realize they're not alone. Yeah, I felt that way as well. And, oh, I'm not the only one. And so, I guess there's a bit of that, reflecting on my journey, reflecting a bit on mental health as well, having had depression and anxiety. So just trying to, you know, support people, remove that stigma around talking about those issues. So, I guess it's if people are interested in reading,
of course,
reflections, and you can, you know, writing can be a mirror. You can sort of, like, books can be that mirror into, other people feel that way. It can be that doorway. Well, I'm feeling that way. What's a way out of that? You know, you share all of those ideas and strategies and paths with other
people. Yeah. And it's so important to have more teachers giving that voice out there, because all of us go through those times. Like, we have a very tough profession, and I heard a statistic a number of years ago, work cover claims, teaching was the second highest profession in Australia at one point for work cover stress claims. And so it's so important to have good news out there, and also people sharing their struggles and how they overcame them. So I think definitely people will find lots of useful blogs on your website, and I'll put those in the show notes.
Okay.
Now, Karen, to finish us off here, I'm going to give you 20 seconds and I will ring a buzzer so you can't go off anymore. The title of this series is Why We Teach. So in 20 seconds, could you please tell us why you teach?
I guess the short answer is to make a difference. So I'm really passionate about raising kind and caring and active young people so they can, and that they know how to advocate for themselves, they can champion others, and they can make a positive impact on the world, because change is not going to happen without they're the future. We need to teach them and give them the tools to learn how to have that positive impact and make life better for themselves and for the future generations.
And that sounds like a pretty good reason to teach. I reckon if that could be everyone's purpose, then getting out of bed Monday morning would be a lot easier. So,
Most of the time.
Most of the time. Oh, yeah. There's still definitely days where it's not so easy. Well, Karen, thank you so much for being a part of this Why We Teach series. I hope that people have enjoyed your story and follow your website and read some of your blogs. And thank you for the inspiration you've given us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I've enjoyed the chat.
And that brings us to the end of today's conversation with Karen Caswell for the Why We Teach series. All of those links that we spoke about in the episode are in the show notes, so feel free to have a look at them. And wherever you are in your teaching journey, I wish you all the best. And please join us next week for episode 3 of the Why We Teach series.